Welcome to The Big Rich Show. This podcast will focus on conversations with friends and acquaintances within the four-wheel drive industry. Many of the people that I will be interviewing, you may know the name, you may know some of the history, but let's get in depth with these people and find out what truly makes them a four-wheel drive enthusiast. So now's the time to sit back, grab a cold one, and enjoy our conversation.
Whether you're crawling the Red Rocks of Moab or hauling your toys to the trail, Maxxis has the tires you can trust for performance and durability. Four wheels or two, Maxxis tires are the choice of champions because they know that whether for work or play, for fun or competition, Maxxis tires deliver. Choose Maxxis. Tread victoriously.
Why should you read Four Low Magazine? Because Four Low Magazine is about your lifestyle, the four-wheel drive adventure lifestyle that we all enjoy. Rock crawling, trail riding, event coverage, vehicle builds, and do-it-yourself tech all in a beautifully presented package. You won't find Four Low on the newsstand rack, so subscribe today and have it delivered to you. Thank you for joining Conversations with Big Rich today. Our guest is Doug Bigelow. Doug is a past competitor in rock crawling and rock racing, and we will talk to Doug about his life experiences and what got him to where we're at today. So,
awesome.
Doug, it's great to hear your voice again and have you yawn with our listeners. I'd like to, just ask, first of all, how have you been?
I'm good, man. I've been real good. Family dominates a lot of what's going on these days. My boys are getting bigger. They're getting older. They got us running 100 miles an hour. And, I've been good. Life's good. Family's good. A little wheeling from time to time. So that's real good. And it's good to hear everybody's voice. Good to hear your voice, man.
Let's jump right in. And where did you grow up?
So I actually grew up right outside of Washington, D.C., about 15 minutes. So I'm not what you would think. I don't live on the mountains or anything like that. My dad was a cop. We lived, I almost want to say, a little bit of a suburban / city type life. And then as I got older and got into the middle school time, high school time, we moved out to Western Maryland, which is a little more rural. Got out in that neck of the woods, and it was a rather truck oriented, Jeep oriented, a little bit more room to spread out. So I grew up the second part, I guess you could say, my high school years out in the Western Maryland, Washington County, Hagerstown, Maryland areas.
Okay.
Yeah, grew up down the road close to the city, so I got a lot of roots that way. But the second part of my life, I've been out here in the Western Maryland area.
So I know that organized sports were a big part of your life.
And yeah.
So was that, besides, were you, besides being a good athlete as you were growing up, which obviously you were, and we'll get into that here in a minute, how were you scholastically? Were you pretty solid, or?
Yeah, I wouldn't say I was the smartest kid in the class, but I wasn't at the end of the line either. I knew, and my parents, my mother always pushed me in the direction of knowing that. And look, I'll just preface this: neither one of my parents went to college or anything like that, but they knew, an avenue for me was if I had, pretty good grades and I seemed to be a pretty good athlete, that there was going to be pretty good opportunities for me down the road. So, yeah, I mean, sports dominated my life growing up. I got two younger brothers, so we were, very blessed to be able to run real fast and jump real high and just very athletically involved. So it helped tremendously.
Excellent. So when you were growing up before age of driving, were you into anything motorized as well?
Yeah, I did. I think I got my first little dirt bike. This is before we moved away from the city. We lived kind of in a pretty good sized subdivision. It's called Marlton, and off of 301 coming out of DC. And there was a golf course there that was abandoned and run down. All the kids used to ride their three wheelers down there and their dirt bikes. And I think I was about 7 or 8 years old when I got my first Honda 50. I thought I was king of the world. David Connor had a 70, and we ran that everywhere.
Excellent. Let's jump into the whole organized sports. I know that's a big part of your life. Talking with Jeremy Hammer, he played college football.
He played at ASU, didn't he? He played at Arizona State. Yeah, I remember having beers with him one time talking about it.
Yep. Go ahead and let's talk about the organized sports. And
you bet, man. Yeah, sports dominated my life growing up, and I knew at a pretty early age I wanted to go to college and play football. And doing all of that, I knew that we had, you have that certain small window of time where you can honestly pick up that time to be able to do it. And with doing that, me and my brothers worked out daily. I mean, we worked out like there was no tomorrow. And I was fortunate enough to earn a full scholarship to Division I school to play football, play the linebacker, and then both my other brothers did as well. So it was a lot of fun.
What did you take away from football that set you up for your life?
Well, I just had a conversation with a rep that I manage here. I don't think I learned anything in classes. I hate to say that, 5 years of college, I don't feel like I learned anything in college, but I do truly believe I learned a lot on the football field. And biggest thing was get up early, get a bunch done, work hard, outwork the person that's next to you, and only good things are going to come. And, I think to this day, I've always been early. I'm usually up at 5 o'clock every morning, get a little bit of a workout in, get some blood moving, and get a good breakfast. And I usually try and get myself up and going and rolling by 7:30 in the morning out the door to heading to work. And, there's a lot of other folks that go about it and are successful in their way. I think that's what's helped me be successful is, persevering. I know having that conversation with that rep the other day, they were like, well, how do you do it? And I was like, well, it's not always easy. It's not always the funnest thing to do. But, when it's 3 degrees outside and you got to go for a run or you got to go for a walk, that's the mental toughness that comes down to stressful, because it's not always the easiest path that gets you there. It's a lot of ups and downs.
Right. No, I agree totally with that. So your career outside of the football and playing ball, you played at Maryland, was that correct?
I played at James Madison.
James
University.
Madison, okay.
Yep, played at James Madison. We're an FCS school and, one AA for those that kind of know. And we're top tier, top five in the country every year, if not in the national championship game. And, I had a lot of full scholarship offers to major Division I schools. And when I really narrowed all my opportunities down, JMU was a phenomenal fit for me. Had a ton of fun there, met my wife there. Actually, probably started my real love for four-wheeling when I was in college, and maybe a little bit before that when I was in high school. But, it was a perfect fit for me, and I'm glad I chose going there.
Awesome. What career path did you take up to where you're at now?
Yeah, it's funny that I thought, when you're in college and I was there to play football, and, I thought I was going to play football for the rest of my life, worked out for every pro team on the planet, and, just wasn't in the cards for me. But one of my best friends in college, Ed Perry, he played for the Miami Dolphins for 9 years. So we used to talk a lot, and Ed was like, hey, man, you gotta come check out these sociology classes. There's a lot of girls here. So, I ended up, by default, when I looked at my, credits that I had already earned, your first 2 years, you're pretty much just doing your basics. And I was like, man, I'm like 3/4 of the way to a criminology degree. So sociology just seemed like the perfect fit. Concentration in criminology, was working on a criminal justice minor too at the same time. I was like, I thought that was going to be the route. My dad was a cop. My uncles were cops. My grandfather was in law enforcement. So it just seemed like the natural progression. I actually even went and took the Pennsylvania State Police exam when I got done with college. But, looking back on it now, I don't think I would have been upset that I went into that route, but I felt that there was different avenues for me. And a big part of that was being in management and being in sales. And I've always had the ability to be able to just, you know, strike up a conversation with somebody. So over the years, being able to kind of hone that craft in an avenue that made sense for me and I could make money for it, then, you know, that's how I ended up in management and sales. And it served me well for the last, you know, almost 20 years now.
And you said you met Kat at college as well?
I did, by accident. You know, it was crazy.
By accident? Did you hit her?
Yeah, literally by accident. I was not looking for a girlfriend. You know, for those that knew me back during that day, I had a long time girlfriend and even did the long distance relationship thing. But I had seen Katrina. She was on the field hockey team, 10 times better athlete than I will ever be. She was a 2-time All-American in field hockey, just, you know, really, really good. But the field hockey team practiced right before the football team on in our stadium. So I used to see her a lot. Never really knew her, didn't know any of her friends. So we never really crossed paths. And it was one night I had actually just finished up my senior fall season. I went and picked up my brother Troy. He was going to military school down in Southern Virginia. And I went and picked him up and came back, and a buddy of ours, Danny Steve, was having a big party. Whole football team there, whole field hockey team. There's probably about 1,000, 1,500 people at this party, huge college party. I met her that night at that party. And, you know, short of going to King of the Hammers or something, we haven't spent a day apart since that day. So that was January 14th of 1998. So, you know, when two people meet, I'm a firm believer that either you know or you don't know. And I think we both knew right then and there, you know, that things were meant to be. So, yeah, a lot of fun with that girl.
I understand the when you meet and you know that it's the right thing.
Yeah,
that's important.
And it is.
22 years
it is.
Later, you know, like 23 years later now, that's, you know, that's proven it.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, she's from Northeast Pennsylvania and, you know, from a really small town, little town called Benton. I think they had like one stop sign in their whole town. And, you know, I'm from Boonesboro. So it's, you know, it's a good sized town, but it's not, you know, a metropolis by any means. But she loved fishing, off-roading, loved, you know, simple things, grew up on a farm. So we met in college. You know, I was big into fishing at the time. I mean, absolutely big into fishing, loved going trout fishing. I don't think there was a day that went by that I didn't go fishing, even when it was freezing outside. And in Harrisonburg, Virginia, heart of the Shenandoah Valley, there's tons of forest trails to the west out between Virginia and West Virginia. So at the time, I used to just spend a lot of time out on, you know, little creeks here and there going trout fishing and walking them, and had to have a little bit of, you know, some kind of vehicle to be able to get back into some of these spots that we were in. And I spent a lot of time out there just driving trails, looking for creeks and hunting down trout. And it was a lot of fun. She used to do a lot of that with us back in the day.
That's awesome. I knew that she was a great athlete just watching her spot you on the courses, rock crawling.
Yeah, she, you know, it's funny because back in the day, I honestly didn't even get my first four-wheel drive vehicle until, you know, I think it was my last year in college. I had a 78 Chevy Stepside, and all of my vehicles all through high school and even into college, I had two-wheel drive trucks. And when I turned 16, I wanted a big lifted truck. There was a lot of guys locally in my high school that had big lifted trucks, and there was a huge mud bog that used to run every year. It's called the Frog Eye Mud Bog, and that was like the cream de la cream in the 80s and early 90s. That's what everybody was doing. I think if you looked at any four-wheeler magazine at that time, it was all about lifted big trucks with big engines, show truck type deals. And I just wanted a big lifted truck. And I got a two-wheel drive Ford Ranger with that piece of crap A4LD transmission I replaced a million times. But, you know, my dad was like, don't do anything to it. Just leave it. Just be fine with it. And I think the first time they went away, I think I might have had it 6 months and had some buddies come over. Brian Ickes came over and we put some lift blocks in the rear, and I had ordered some coils I'd seen out of the back of a magazine and slammed those on and found some used tires down the road and ended up lifting that little Ranger, you know, 2.5 inches. And I thought I was on top of the world at that time. And, you know, lo and behold, you don't really know what you're doing at that time when you're in, when you're younger. I didn't know anything about changing gears or, you know, doing anything different with transmissions, or, you know, somebody suggested, hey, you know what, you can get both of them tires to turn together if you weld everything up in the rear. So, you know, I think I did my first 6011 Lincoln back in, you know, I might have been 17, 18 years old. And man, that truck went everywhere. I got it stuck more than I think I ever did. But I had a lot of fun with it too, and broke a lot of stuff. And I think that's how I learned to fix on stuff, and at least learned to love laying underneath of a vehicle and on a hot day when it's nice and cool and putting something back together. It's it agrees with me. I like doing that kind of stuff. Don't like working on stuff all the time, but from time to time, it doesn't hurt my feelings too much.
I get it. I grew up working on cars all the time.
Right.
My dad drag raced and then bought a flat bottom drag boat and grew up.
You always had something going on.
I started off with a Volkswagen Bug because I could afford it.
Yeah. Well, that was the thing. I'll never forget. You know, I had that vehicle. My brother Troy had an Isuzu Amigo. Actually, I think maybe possibly one of the only two-wheel drive Isuzu Amigos on the planet. And I had so many problems with this Ford Ranger and this transmission. I think I must have replaced the seals in it probably about 10 times. I got really good. I can pull the transmission in and out in my driveway in about, you know, probably less than an hour. I got so good at doing it with the right tools. Pulled the seals out, put new seals in the front and rear of it, and, you know, get it back on the road to go do what I was doing. But my brother wanted, he knew he was going to get a better trade-in for my Ranger than his Amigo, and he wanted to buy his first four-wheel drive truck, which was, I think it was a 94 Dodge Ram at the time. They came out with a new body style. Yep. So he said, hey, I want to switch trucks, and we ended up doing that. And I was like, man, four-wheel drive, that's pretty cool. Like that stuff goes pretty good. And it was, I think about a year or so later, I'd saved up enough money and ended up, I think it was about a junior in college. And I ended up buying this 78 Chevy Stepside. Was at one of our local auctions, blue, nice Chevy blue. I love that truck. I mean, Katrina and I think we drove a million miles in that thing down every backfire road and trail in Virginia and all over God's creation at the time. It was sitting on 38s, little 350, and just a really fun truck. And we spent a lot of time running Second Mountain Trail and Dictum's Ridge and all these little trails, which I thought was, you know, at the top of the world, and you know, had no idea what it really looked like. But we had a lot of fun exploring, and, you know, it's before cell phones. We'd go and get lost, and I was like, man, I'd have to like stop and walk up to somebody's farm to figure out where the heck we were. So, you know, we had a lot of fun back in those days. And I think that first four wheel drive truck, we were actually pulling out some old pictures here the other day. And I was like, man, I should have never got rid of that truck. I should have never put it up for sale. But, you know, at the time, there'll always be another truck. And I think I've searched for about 15 years now and haven't been able to find one again.
I get it. I had an 86 Chevy smooth side that short bed one ton that I used as my truck for my contracting company, my landscape company. And man, I love that truck.
Yeah.
To this day, you know, I wish I had it.
Yeah. You never think about it. I mean, I remember I went from that step side, and then I ended up buying a Suburban, had that for a while. And then I had a K5 and just had a million of one little trucks. And I don't think I really got into the big time, like, you know what, we're going to trail ride all the time type of movement until I you know, the rock crawling part, I was always into trail riding. We were always into, you know, going to look for fishing spots. But it wasn't until I had just graduated from college, and I had bought a CJ5, and there was a local guy had one on like 34s. I was a skinny 34 inch TSLs. I ended up picking up this thing for like next to nothing. And where Katrina and I were living at the time, when we first got out of school, across the road was a family of ours that we know. They had 700 acres of mountain ground, all up and down the mountain. And they, because we knew each other, I used to go up there all the time. And we would get into some pretty good stuff, a lot of trail riding, a lot of rock crawling. I didn't really know it as rock crawling back in the day. It was just, you know, had to go over that patch of rocks to get to where we were going. And, you know, at the time, there was a lot of Jeeps that were, I think, out and about running around. And the TJ, I think, really started to push that envelope in the late 90s and early 2000s. Seemed like you started to see more Jeeps on the road. And as more Jeeps got on the road, then, you know, there's more guys that were going out and going off-road. In Maryland, there's not a bazillion places to go wheeling like you're in, you know, Texas or Southern California or New Mexico or something like that. So, you know, there was few and far places that we ended up going that we could actually get to. I mean, I didn't have a ton of money at the time or trailers or anything like that, but that first Jeep opened up my eyes to a world of possibilities. And really, I was going to even say like the internet at the time too. Everybody started talking about what they were doing in the early days of Pirate and Paragon Adventure Park. Everybody was talking about their builds. And man, next thing I know, this thing's sitting on one ton axles with 42s. And, you know, you started dreaming bigger and thinking more about what was possible of going out there. So the days of just, you know, bebopping down a trail and enjoying the woods turned into, hey, maybe I could find something I could conquer a little bit more. Hey, I can go ride something that's a little more gnarly or whatnot. And I think that's kind of how it worked for us. But man, back in the day, if I would ever thought that we would gone from, you know, doing some mud bogs back in the day to where we are now, getting ready to build, you know, a new race truck and back into King of the Hammers and watching King of the Hammers, and even more importantly, you know, competitive rock crawling from then to there, I would have been like, nah, there's no way. That'll never happen. But it's progressed. It's been pretty cool to see.
Excellent. So I have to ask, you're actually building another racer to compete at KOH?
Yeah, so probably 4 or 5 months ago, started going down that route again, and talked to the guys down at Partially Committed Racing. Like, hey, they actually approached me. Like, I had put some feelers out of, you know what, I want to get back into racing. And Lee contacted me and was like, hey, we'd love to work with an OG, an old guy that's getting back into it. And I still have great relationships with many of the sponsors that I have that are out there, and talked to many of them, and they were all about me coming back. So I said, you know what, I don't want to rush anything. I don't want to do it with some big massive timetable. I'm going to be out racing this year. That's my goal. But I want to make sure that I do the vehicle the right way. And most importantly, I want to do it with somebody else now. I all those years of running single seaters, you have a lot of weird conversations with yourself while you're doing this stuff. So, you know, especially, you know, it'd be nice to, especially when it's dark, it gets mighty cold out there. It'd be nice to joke with somebody. So yeah, building a two seater this time, and, looking forward to it. With the chassis done, gathered a ton of parts, you know, biggest thing right now is engine transmission transfer case, which I have those, but wow, looking at how fast everybody's going these days, I don't think I quite have enough motor. I think I need a little bit more motor. So that's kind of where we are right now. So I'm excited to see this thing through and finished. And I'm hoping here in the next couple of months, we have it done.
Excellent. I was going to ask if you're getting back into it, if you had won the lottery or something.
Well, good Lord. I mean, I was actually just, I was watching some Instagram clips here while I was watching football. And I mean, I was watching some stuff from like Cody and Shannon and some of these other guys. I'm like, I don't know what bank they rob, but good Lord. I mean, it's everybody's got multiple rigs and got brand new stuff. And, you know, and good for those. You know, I talked to Shannon here not too long ago. His program's always been top notch. And anytime you can, you know, get a couple other vehicles going at the same time, that helps tremendously. And, you know, I don't know Cody and those other guys, but there's a lot of money flowing through the sport right now. Absolutely. I mean, there is a ton of money running through that sport, and it's good. I'm glad, because it's, you know, the trickle-down effect for everybody that's out there too.
Absolutely. Let's back up and go to the first competitive event four-wheel drive that you were in.
No, let's not talk about that. That was horrible. I'm just playing. You know, when I first got into this, I really did it. My wife, I said, was from Northeast Pennsylvania, and being on the internet, kind of, you know, talking junk to people left and right, you kind of get to know some people. And, you know, Brian Whaley was one of the first guys I talked to. These were all guys from the Paragon Adventure Board. And I'd never been to the park before, but knowing that the park was where it was, I actually remember being up there at my in-laws and telling my father-in-law, like, dude, we need to go find this place. Like, I don't know where it is, but we got to go find it. So we did. It was like an hour and change away. And we ended up riding over there, and this was maybe like 2002, and I'd met Kyle and Stephanie Knops over there, and nice people, super cool, and had a lot of good conversation, saw the park, came up, I think a couple months later, and jumped and right seated with some people, so I got to know the area, and talking to Kyle and just being online at that time a lot, they were looking for judges, so I said, you know what, I want to be a part of this. I don't have something I can compete in quite yet. And I didn't know, you know, I think probably the biggest thing that I remember seeing back in the day of what competitive rock crawling was all about was, I remember this video, Brian Hamilton absolutely having his foot to the floor, destroying his vehicle. And then, you know, you had other clips of, like, you know, Chris Durham ripping the whole side of his bed off of his truck out west. And I'm like, man, I don't know if I'm ready for all that. I mean, I've always done some stuff, but nothing like this. And we got into it that next year. I got to meet a lot of guys. Actually met Brian, ended up meeting Charlie Melchner, you know, Brad Stiles, Ken Shoup, all those guys. And they were all just really cool dudes. I approached Brian Whaley at the time. He had a shop open and said, hey, you know what? I want to compete. And what would you be interested in building? And everybody was big on building single seaters at that time. Good old Melchner duped me and ended up buying some Unimog rear ends off of him with god awful axles. I'll never buy them damn things ever again. we broke a bunch, and that first event that we ended up going out to on kind of just we just got the buggy done. I'd driven it over a handful of gravel piles in Otter's lot at the time, and we loaded that sucker on a trailer, and Kat and I drove out to the Badlands in Indiana. And yeah, I think we might have completed one course. Maybe, you know, I wasn't quite prepared for, like, I was okay with the big rocks. That was no problem, but there were some pretty good hill climbs that were there. And yeah, I'll never forget watching John Boring roll over down Purgatory that day and this enormous rock come through his steering column and just destroy his orbital valve, you know? So you get a rude awakening of, like, what did you get yourself into? And, you know, we learned that first year. It was all about learning. That first event was an eye opener. And I realized at that point, I was like, if I'm going to do this and be good at it, I need to go and practice more. And with, you know, Kat's folks living that close to the Paragon Adventure Park, and this was before kids too, I think we were there almost every weekend, if not every other weekend. So we kind of committed and went full bore to it and practiced a lot and had a lot of fun with it too.
So from that first event at the Badlands, you competed at New Rock then as well?
Yep. Yep. We competed at New Rock that year. And the first single seater that we had, 4.3 Power Glide Atlas, had great parts. You know, back in the day when after I'd gone through and judged, you know, I remember talking to Kat, and I actually was going to buy a Harley. And my brother had a Harley at the time. I was like, you know what, I'm going to buy a Harley, and we're just going to ride. And I was like, you know what, it seemed like everybody had a Harley at the time. I was like, I don't know. I was like, what about this rock crawling thing? Like, I got this money. Let's just, like, I want to try this. And Katrina's very competitive. I'm very, very competitive. And we wanted something that would kind of be an extension of what we did in college, but now we can kind of do it together too, which was cool. I was like, man, we gotta do this. Let's go and be competitive. That first year, man, it was a real learning curve. Had a lot of fun. Made gobs of relationships that I'll take to my grave with me. Just like really good salt of the earth people that we ended up meeting, and had a lot of fun. Like realized, man, we're okay at this. Like we're pretty good. By the end of the year, I think we were doing okay. And I'll never forget. I was like, the end of the year, you know, Randy Torrett used to bring all of his guys to all the events, and Richard, who's kind of like his kind of crew chief type deal there, always used to keep a list of guys that were doing well. I remember by the end of the year, I was on Richard's list of guys he kept tabs on. I was like, so man, we must be doing okay. And that first vehicle, man, we beat the crap out of. I think I busted probably a dozen portal boxes in those axles. Rolled it over, cut the top of the cage off once or twice and refixed it. But, you know, learned a lot and had a lot of fun doing it at the same time. And we knew that was something we were going to do for a while then.
So in those early days, what was the favorite place that you wheeled in competition? In the rock? Ooh,
in that first year, you know, that very first year, it wasn't until the man-made events started coming. I think it was the next year, but that first year had a lot of fun. I think it was probably Paragon. I mean, I was just so comfortable with it. Had a lot of fun. I'd always heard about the Badlands, never had been there. And then, you know, you hear about Jellicoe, Tennessee too. I mean, that's like kind of the old holy grail of East Coast rock crawling. And, I don't know that there was one specific. I always loved going to Paragon. That Jellicoe event that was down there that first year, we went, man, there was a million people there. Just a lot of fun. And I love anytime you can get out and get dirty. So, you know, I think if I had to put it on one, I'd probably say it was Jellicoe, just because of the venue and the people that we met. And I don't think we finished a course down there, but I know I rolled a bunch and got some pretty cool pictures from that, which was fun.
And possibly Jellicoe Hotel?
Oh, my God. Yeah. Yeah. Well, I thought we were going to talk about embarrassing stuff, but yeah.
We don't have to get specific, you know.
yeah, Jellicoe Hotel, you know, the after parties. And, you know, I love rock on. I love rock racing. Love King of the Hammers. Love all of that. But honestly, at the end of the day, even from back in the rock crawler days, the XRA times, hell, I was just talking to Dave Cole about a possible something that might end up happening one of these days at the Jellicoe Motel. It's the after parties and getting together and having a beer and chilling out and hanging out with people that we enjoy and we got common interests in. That's the fun part, man. Those Jellicoe Motel days and the Jellicoe Rodeo, they were something to be had.
Absolutely. It amazed me that the locals, the police, would just sit in the edge of the parking lot and watch shenanigans.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, those guys were always cool. And I think the town always enjoyed when we came there because, yeah, we cut up at the motel and we'd shoot fireworks and drink a lot of beer, but we always cleaned everything up. We were always you know, good stewards of what we were doing there. And we brought a lot of fun and money to the town too. So I think they always treated us with good respect.
I agree. So let's talk about the XRA days. Did you get in on that at the beginning, or?
Yeah, it was the next year. So kind of how we got into XRA was, you know, our first single seater that we had with Unimog axles, I was like, all right, I beat the tar out of this thing. This thing's kind of like, the cage is crooked now. I knew what we wanted to be successful in, and everybody's being successful with moon buggies. So I was like, I already got a bunch of good parts here. Let me talk to Brian again. Maybe we'll just build another chassis, slam all these parts together. I knew I wanted something that sat down a little bit lower. And that's when we built our first moon buggy. And, you know, we're rock crawling back in the day. Love, you know, with you guys and We Rock and, you know, You Rock and New Rock. Just we if there was an event, we were often going to it. But going back to just all of the time that we spent at Paragon, used to meet up there on a Saturday morning with Melchner, and it'd just be me and him, and we would just peel out and go ride around the park and never stop. We'd ride 3-4 hours and never stop, other than if we were, you know, going to cut up and laugh at each other. And you get, you know, Devin and Jay Riggs and all of those guys that were at the park all the time. And before there was, you know, going fast through rocks, we were kind of already, I don't want to say kind of already doing that, but we were kind of doing it. Like, hey, let's go run around the park and see how long this can take us to do. And I had, there was an event at the Badlands, the East Finals. And I forget how I actually, I had left BF Goodrich and was with Max's at the time. And they asked me, hey, would you be interested in coming out to this event? And I was like, yeah, all right. Okay. You know, that might make sense. And so we did. And we came out there and we won the damn thing. Like we had a lot of fun. Like we went out there and won the event. And I think the going fast in me and going fast over rocks, I was like, wow, this is a lot of fun. We're jumping the rig, we're sliding sideways, and we're having a lot of fun doing it side-by-side racing. We're not banging doors off of each other, but this is pretty cool. And I think we're going to be okay with it. I remember me and Ken Bloom, we were the first time we had ever rock raced, and I was number one, he was number two, and guys were like, wow, like these guys are fast. They know what they're doing. And being able to pick a line quick and fast and make it through it, I enjoyed that. I had a lot of fun with XRA. You know, it was a shame, you know, it went away, but I could see it maybe coming back one of these days. I think what those guys are doing down there with the Southern Rock Racing Series and Rock Bouncing, I see a lot of that. I see a lot of similarities, so it's pretty cool.
Yeah, the Rock Bouncers have gone to, instead of just being hill killers, they've gone into to more of a short course race, more like kind of an in-between of XRA and what we were doing with Dirt Riot. So.
Yeah. A lot of cool, you know, I think the hard part for, you know, our sport in general, and it doesn't matter if it's rock racing or rock crawling or whatever, it's just, you know, spectator engagement and having a cool venue for that all to happen. And, you know, having doing it within the confines of Mother Nature too. You know, it's not like we're just building something out there and throwing it down. This is, you know, I think that's, I'm glad to see that it's weathered these storms that we've had over the years and it's still here, because it's really cool and people are starting to really take notice of it too.
Exactly. So getting away from the racing end of it, let's talk a little family. I saw some pictures over the last couple of years of your son or sons in football uniforms. So,
oh man,
they're playing. You were at lacrosse today?
Yeah, we had workouts this morning. So both my boys are very athletic, and I don't want to say chipped off. Hopefully they're 10 times better than I ever have been, and my wife. They love playing football, basketball, lacrosse, and they're just active. They want to be on the go all the time. So this morning we were out and we have lacrosse workouts this morning on Sunday morning, Sunday, Tuesdays, Thursdays, and we have a home gym. So the boys are lifting and doing box jumps, all types of other stuff. in between, but they love sports. You know, I would say probably out of all of it, I think the youngest Parker, he might love football a little bit more than the oldest Hunter, but Hunter loves lacrosse. We're in the hotbed for lacrosse where we're at here in Maryland, and you know those guys, they're competitors. They're much like their mother and I. They don't like to lose either, so which is pretty cool.
Yeah, excellent. That's a good trait to have. Yeah. That carried over into, you know, outside of the sports and carried into the rest of their life. It gives them a leg up.
My grandmother always said, you show me a good loser and I'll show you a loser. And I believe that in life. And, you know, there was 8 of us grandkids, 7 of us went to college on athletic scholarships. And, I think that's installed in you in an early age. And yeah, there's nothing wrong with that. Now, you know, you don't have to be a complete jerk when you lose. You don't have to be an asshole either, but I don't want you to like it. You shouldn't like losing at the end of the day.
Correct. I hate to say this, but I think that the video game culture kind of accepts that.
Yeah.
Because mm-hmm. you're never going to beat the game.
Yep. Yep.
And so you're always, you know, it always wants you to give you a little bit more and a little bit more and a little bit more. And you become obsessed with it to try to beat it and not necessarily ever really do.
Yeah.
And that's why I think athletics and sports in general are a better educational tool for dealing with regular life.
Myself. Yeah, most definitely. I mean, you know, one of the things my kids are normal kids, so they got their video games and whatnot, but they know when it's time to put those things down. Hey, we're going outside. We're getting some stuff done. If they're not running a chainsaw or running the golf cart around here, helping with, you know, we have goats and chickens and, you know, not a big place, but we got stuff to do around here. So they're working and getting stuff done. You know, they're like normal kids. When it's time to play, they're going to play, but they focus on their sports, which is cool. And there's, like I learned a lot of life lessons, from the ball field, which is, you know, translated into the workforce and just general, you know, being able to be just a good person. I think they'll learn those lessons too. They're already starting to, which is cool.
Yeah. Excellent. So how old are they?
So my oldest Hunter is 14 right now. My youngest Parker is 12. So it's, you know, it's amazing. It happens overnight. You know, Kat was my spotter when we first started all of this. And, you know, our first events with you guys and the other guys, I mean, that's who I trusted. I didn't trust anybody else other than my wife. And when we had Hunter, she kind of stepped back. Brian Whaley spotted for me for a little while. And it was there. I think Hunter might have been maybe about a year, year and a half old. And we went out to XRA, won that event. And, you know, a couple 9 months later, Parker pops out and she's got 2. And I think that was probably right around the time where, you know, King of the Hammers started getting pretty, pretty exciting. And, you know, we've always, the kids have kind of come to events and drugging events, but I think it was probably me, not so much her, that I was always afraid something was going to happen, or I worry a lot, as an early dad. I think it was probably more the fear of the unknown. They don't give you owner's manuals for these things. So it's not, you don't know necessarily what's going on, but, you know, it's a lot of fun being able now, as they've gotten a little bit older. You know, we have a Suzuki Samurai stretched out, 37s backseat in it, and you know, everybody will go wheeling for the day, or the JK that we have, we'll go wheeling for the day. So it's good to get them out on the trail now and have some fun.
Excellent. So 14, wow.
Yeah, 14 going on like 23. And it does, it really does. They've they eat me out of house and home. That's why I got to work my butt off every day. They eat like men right now. You know, a couple $100 a week at Sam's Club just doesn't get it done some days. And, you know, I just, we went and got them oldest goes to private school because of his lacrosse. And so we had to get him, you know, uniform and clothes. And, you know, kid's wearing, you know, 34 pants right now. And he's starting to look me in the eye. And it's like, man, it ain't going to be much longer. And he's going to be taller than I am. So it's
14 and he's 34. Wow.
Yeah. He's a big kid. He's about 175 pounds right now. And he's 5'10" ish. Right in that neighborhood. So he's, you know, the good thing is he's lifting and running, and, you know, we did 45 minutes of sprints, agilities, and footwork on a Sunday morning. So, you know, he's starting to get tuned in as a pretty good athlete right now.
Great. So what's the future hold for Doug? I mean, you know, you just started a new job. I know that you were in title for a long time. My wife
was
in title as well.
And yeah, I remember that. That you know, I honestly thought I'd be in real estate for the rest of my life. I thought I'd be in the title business for the rest of my life. I spent 17 years there. Majority of the time I was competing and rock crawling. You know, I was out and about. I was fortunate. I was the director of sales for a company. And then I had my own settlement firm and law firm for about 8 years there during kind of the biggest parts where I was competing. So fortunately for me, I was able to take that time to be able to do that. And, you know, a handful of years ago, kind of looked back on it and said, you know what, time to shut the business down. You know, as much as I love it, real estate's not making me rich right now. I don't think it was making anybody rich at the time.
Yeah.
And it was just, you know, it was time to look at something else. I always knew I could sell. And the biggest thing was like, what do I want to do? Where do I want to go? I came across, you know, a Fortune 500 corporation gobbled me up and became the number one sales rep that they had with the company and worked my way up through management, with that company and had a lot of fun doing it. Gained tons of experience, especially at a high level with a big corporation like that, you know, you start realizing, I mean, I'm not 25 anymore. And now at, you know, almost 45, I'm looking at what's the end game for me? Where do I want to be? And realizing that you can make a bigger impact with a smaller company that matters. And, when you start looking at where do you ultimately want to look at as far as, you know, am I going to stay in Maryland for the remainder of my life? And yeah, I don't think so. You know, I grew up here. I've been raised here. I live here now, but you know, my family, we love Tennessee. We love being outdoors. And unfortunately, Maryland's just, not necessarily conducive to doing that all the time. So, you know, we're actually planning a trip as we speak, down to Tennessee, here in a couple of weeks. And fortunately everybody's working remotely right now. So it doesn't impact me at all. Doesn't impact Kat at all. And both the boys are learning virtually right now. So we're going to go down and enjoy some mountains and some Jeep trails and go down for a week or two and kind of enjoy what we're doing down there. And who knows, you know, something could change tomorrow. And, you know, I do know this. We enjoy offering a ton. My boys are at the point now where, you know, they're turning wrenches pretty good and I can rely on them to get stuff done, which is fun. So, you know, when we're doing that and we're hanging out in the garage and I'm teaching them what to do and how to do it, it's fun. And being able to pass that on to the next generation of guys that are going to be out there being good stewards of the trails, you know, I want to do it in an area I can do it all the time. So if it's a Tennessee or an Alabama or somewhere that's more off-road friendly, then that's probably what we'll end up doing, to be honest.
So what part of Tennessee do you enjoy?
Well, our Cats folks, I love the eastern part of Tennessee.
Right.
Eastern Tennessee is, you know, the Smokies through there, I could drive through that all day long. And we did here a couple of weeks ago, went down for 2 weeks and you know, we're looking at property, looked at some lake property down there. My family, we have some lake property in Southern Virginia, and we were just looking at other, you know, comparable types of properties. And of all people, I was talking to Ken Shoup. Ken bought some property in northern East Tennessee, bought a 100-acre farm out that way. And I was like, you know what? Damn, that Ken Shoup, he's a smart dude. I was like, we got to do the same thing. They're not, I'm so used to, you know, you guys probably see it there in California. Property's just so expensive. Acreage in my neck of the woods is like $75,000 an acre. And that's just, you know, you don't see that down there in Tennessee. So, like, cost of living's a lot cheaper. People are ungodly much nicer. And, it's a really nice area for family and ability to get out and about, get out on some trails, go fish in a stream, go have some fun. I think just Tennessee alone, just from off-road parks, I think there's like 15 or 16 off-road parks just in Tennessee. So there's a lot of opportunity to get out and about. And of all things you can imagine, I've gotten into, I'm no Lance Clifford, but I've gotten into some mountain biking here recently and gotten a pretty good bike. And so we like getting out and about and enjoying some fresh air in our lungs whenever we can.
Excellent. That's the future then, possibly move into the mountains of Tennessee.
That's a good idea. It is. You know, I don't, and what that looks like, I don't know. You know, I look at it now. Within the next handful of years, both these boys are probably going to be on to college and going to be, hopefully headed to big universities to do what they want to do. And, at that point, Kat and I, we can kind of come back to center and do what we want to do as well. But, I think we'll be East Coast based. And we flirted. I was being recruited for some jobs that were out on the West Coast. And, as much as I love the West Coast and I love going to California and Arizona, I could maybe see myself living in Arizona, but, I think they're cool places to go and visit, but I think my heart's on the East Coast. So, Lord only knows what the future will end up. I do know it's going to be more four-wheeling. It's going to be more off-roading and definitely more fishing, probably a little beer drinking in there at the same time. So It'll be interesting to see what the future ends up holding for us.
Well, that's awesome. So we've run the gamut that I can think of. Is there anything else that we haven't touched on that you would like to share?
Well, I think probably the coolest thing, in our sport, Big, and I think you can probably appreciate this as well. It's just all of the really cool people that you end up meeting, on these times that we do get together. Probably I laughed about this years ago. We were sitting having some drinks, Melchster and I, Ricky, my brother, and we were talking like, man, it's really glad that you schmucks live in New York and everybody else, some of the best friends that we've come across are people fortunately live in other states and sometimes the other side of the country. Guys, I would drop everything at the drop of a hat and if they needed something, go handle what they would need. So I think probably one of the last, like, just the people that you end up meeting throughout all this, some of the coolest dudes that around, guys and girls that just have the same common interests at hand and just really nice people, a lot of fun times. Good Lord. A lot of fun times. We were putting together this Jeep ride here not too long ago and turned into like a phenomenal organizational opportunity to raise a bunch of money for a kid that was diagnosed with cancer. I was talking to Gene Rose. He was helping with the day-to-day of what we were trying to do. We organized this big ride in like 5 or 6 days. And we got the tough news from another one of our club members that I don't know if you remember Stan Barkowski. Stan passed away and, it was a tough deal. And I just remember Gene and I just kind of hugging it out right then and there, kind of sucked, a lot of good times with Stan. And, he looked at me, I looked at him, he goes, he wouldn't want us doing anything, more than hanging out with each other and having good times and making memories. So, you know, that's the thing. As you get a little older, you don't think about this in your 20s and maybe even in your 30s. When you get in your 40s, start talking and thinking about every opportunity that we get to get together with people. It's fun, and you're making memories and you're laughing, and that's good and fun. And I want to do more of that. I want to hang out more with people and enjoy people's times and do it with family as well. And that's what it's all about. I think that's why we all enjoy being in Jeeps and rock crawlers and buggies and hanging out with each other is to enjoy each other's company.
Yeah. It's that social aspect.
It is. It is. And I think back in the day, the real commonality of everybody coming together through a handful of these different websites, you know, Pyre 4x4 being one of those biggest opportunities. There's no way in hell, and I know you were talking to Kevin Carey, there's no way in hell I would ever known a Kevin Carey from the other side of the country. There's no damn way in hell if it wasn't for that website. And because of, you know, who he was and where I was getting to at the time, you know, Kevin, I dropped the hat. I love that dude. I mean, you come when he was here on the East Coast, he'd stay at our house for a week, 2 weeks, like you just hanging out. Like, you know, if it wasn't for, if it wasn't for good people, I would have a whole lot less memories about off-road and a whole lot less memories in my just life if it wasn't for a lot of these things that we've had the blessing and been able to fortunately, you know, be able to do. So it's the people that are out there. If anybody's listening to this and listen to anything this meathead saying, spend more time with people, because you never know when it's your time. So, you know, do more of that.
I think this last year really that resonated with everybody with being the lockdowns and social distancing and, you know, people worried about, you know, gatherings and that kind of thing.
Once
everything opens up again completely, which hopefully it does here soon, we'll see. But I think you'll see a lot more people enjoying that social gatherings.
I concur with you. I mean, I think here the other day we had this ride and it really came together in a short amount of time. We had about 4,000 Jeeps that showed up just to put Christmas lights on their vehicles and ride by this kid's house and blow their horns and show this kid a bunch of love. People were so sick and tired of being like, just like in their house and just told they can't do anything. And that's why I really love our off-road lifestyle. Cause you can still go hang out with people, but you can get some fresh lungs, some fresh air in your lungs and go and have a good time. And I see more opportunities for the future for off-roading. I think it's really going to grow and explode more here in the future. I really do. As people look for more opportunities to get out and about, and who knows what our new normal looks like in the future. I don't really give two craps what it looks like. It's probably going to, for me, I know it's going to be more four-wheeling and more good times with friends and buddies, and hopefully I get to do it around the country more than I have in the last year or two, but it'll be fun. It'll be a lot of fun, more fun in our future.
Cool. So is there anything that you would like to ask me?
Oh man, probably one of the biggest questions that I've always had, what is the coolest place that, because you travel a ton.
Yes.
You and Shelly are out all over God's creation. I saw like not long ago, I think y'all were coming back. Maybe it was Mexico y'all were coming back from. I just remember seeing some pool, some really, really cool pool. What's probably the coolest place that you guys have ever visited?
Okay. When you put it that way, I'm going to say the coolest place that I ever visited was probably Japan.
Oh, I forgot you guys went over there. Yeah.
Yeah, we went over there. Nayazumi and Masa were putting on a rock crawl, the We Rock event over there. And so we went over and we spent, I don't know, it was like 2.5 weeks or something there.
Wow.
And we got to, you know, hang out with the Tsutas. We went all around NARA. And one of the things that amazed me there was how old their society is and civilization.
Yeah.
You know, we think here, you know, 200, 250 years, you know, that the nation has been around, and then this, and, you know, and the buildings. And they got wood buildings over there that are 1,500 years old.
Yeah, yeah.
It's just amazing how they live with so many people in such a, you know, truly a small footprint. Tokyo was amazing. I would love to be able to go back there and see more. We saw a lot in the NARA area, and then we saw a lot around Tokyo. And
it was
very interesting, especially being in a country that, you know, doesn't have English as a primary language.
Yeah.
Or, you know, it's pretty much a secondary language there.
Right.
But their society is so different from ours when you travel and you see how people live and how they go about their daily life, that it's like watching a movie or reading a storybook and being able to be part of it.
That's pretty neat. That's pretty cool.
Sense.
It does. You know, for the handful of years there, we were racing side-by-sides. My brother and I we got involved with the folks from Arizon Tire, and they had us out to Chicago for one of the UTV conventions, and just had the opportunity for a week just to hang out. And their culture is much different than ours, but very welcoming and very gracious folks that I enjoyed it. I enjoyed hanging out. I mean, they immersed us. I was like, you know, they took care of everything for us, which was, you know, really, really cool. Spent a lot of time in places I don't think I would have ever gone, in Chicago, in Chinatown, Eaton. And they had families that were out of Chicago that they graciously, like, literally, like, made us dinner, like authentic type of dinners, which was phenomenal. You know, just, you know, those types of atmospheres you don't ever think that you're ever going to get the opportunities to be in. So I couldn't imagine actually visiting Japan and being over there and seeing that. Now it just seemed, do they have areas, like tons of areas to go four wheeling in, or is that prevalent, or was that just specific in the you said it was in their avenues, like where they have like an off-road park over there, right?
Yeah, their family are foresters.
Ah.
And so for generations, they've been providing wood products, or the lumber for wood products. And
interesting.
They're very, very well organized with their methods.
Right.
You know, there is no what you would call, you know, old growth.
Right.
But everything is, you know, these just mountainsides full of forests that are being raised for wood products there in Japan.
And that is huge.
So they're able to use part of that property, and it's really close to the house, the canyon that they use, and they've created, you know, it doesn't have a lot of rock in that area, but they've been able to create rock obstacles using concrete. But when I first drove up to it, as we were getting close to it, I was like, well, where's the concrete? This is all, you know, granite slab. But they did a really good job of making the granite or the concrete look like granite. It just absolutely amazed me. And there, the events and the culture around the events, you know, like we do, you know, you draw a chip or, you know, you have a ticket or something like that, that, you know, numbers when you're doing like giveaways for product. Or, you know, drawing your driving order, that kind of thing. They do everything with, you know, Rochambeau, rock, paper, scissors.
Ah, so, that'd be pretty cool.
You know, all of a sudden they'll say, okay, you know, everybody gets up and they do the, you know, rock, paper, scissors. And then everybody that got rock, say, is the winner. And then everybody else sits down. And then they go, you know, and they keep doing this until there's like one person standing, and that's the person who won that prize.
Right.
So, I mean, it can take a while. You know, but one of the things that I saw is that watching everybody, nobody cheated.
Right.
You know, you start off with like 500 people doing this and you're like, well, Christ, you could, you know, get all the way to like the last 20 people just by changing at the very last second what your thing is or waiting until everybody was completely honest with it.
That's and cool.
I was like, you know, I don't know if I could pull that off at one of my events.
You know? No, I can totally see people cheating. I can totally see people. Do you, I was thinking about this when you said the concrete slabs. Do you see more, like, do you see opportunities for maybe more man-made rock crawling events in the future?
I do. If they're in the right areas.
Right.
Developing the natural properties, I think, that have the rock formations on it is still the best way to go.
Yeah.
Because to be honest, that bringing it into the cities, while it may be good for advertising, it's not necessarily, we're not getting to the people that really enjoy the sport.
Right. Right.
So a mixture of natural and man-made would be great.
Right.
I don't think you'll find anybody but the owners of the property that will invest in that man-made stuff being done.
Yeah.
You know, I myself, there's too many times where we invested in other people's properties to build those and then got shut out.
Right.
For whatever reason within a year or two.
Yeah.
And so it's really difficult. You know, the situation would have to be absolutely perfect for us to invest in somebody else's property again. But, you know, I see that people out there that are investing in properties to turn into off-road parks. And if there's not a lot of rock in that area, I think it's, you know,
makes sense.
It makes sense to either haul it in or create it. You know, I hope people do that more.
Yeah. Some of the most fun I think we ever had was, being out at Columbus, Ohio, the man-made course out of the rock out there. I love that. That place was like a skateboard park for buggies. I mean, just a lot of fun, cool climbs, you know, technical hard stuff, some stuff you thought you were going to die on doing, had a lot of fun. But I can also see too, like how difficult that is from your all's perspective. I honestly couldn't imagine, you know, just the headaches and whatnot. But yeah, it's this avenue of rock crawling has come full circle. I mean, it's cool to see that it's still here. You know, when I remember seeing pictures of, you know, trail rides that were going on where people were breaking open sledge and claw and jack, I was like, man, that's pretty cool. And you know, more of the magazines really started showing stuff. Is like, oh, it seemed like more people wanted to go towards the harder, like, hey, we're going to get out and ride and do more technical and difficult things. And you know, I think the internet really exploded things, so it's, you know, things die off quick. All types of fads die off quick, and I think the sure availability of just still, this is still an avenue where you can go and get in your Jeep or get in your Bronco or get in your truck or whatever you're going to do and still go do it. We're always going to have competitions and people are always going to see who's the best of the best. But I think there was opportunities where, maybe it was going in a direction that I don't know if we're going to come back for that. But to see that we're still got buggies that are out there doing this, and King of the Hammers are as big as it is, and rock crawling events are as big as they are. I mean, it's cool. I mean, it's really cool. I told Kat the other day, I was like, man, this back part of the garage still got enough parts here where you can put together a moon buggy. She just looked at me and rolled her eyes and walked away from me. She's like, you don't even have the other vehicle done, much less everything you want to do. This JK, get out of my face.
So. Well, I can tell you that maintenance wise, and even the first build, is a lot cheaper to build a rock crawler.
Yeah.
Than it is to go racing.
It is, but, man. That it is. Like I enjoy the racing. I thoroughly do. I always will. I've always been that type of guy. I even think I said it in a video one time. I've always been that guy putting everything on my back. Like I enjoy that part of it. But you're damn right. Like we'd go to a rock crawling event and prep. What the hell's prep? Like we got gas to put in this thing. You got some spare parts. Let's go. There was no prep, you know, to go to a rock crawling event. Not, I see some competitive rock crawling in our future. I see that coming too. I mean, the boys are at that point where I could see putting them in a moon buggy and let's go have some fun and see what we can do here. But I don't know. Everybody's got portal axles and rear steer. I don't know what I'd do with another lever inside the vehicle with rear steer. I guarantee we'd all be upside down and sideways real quick.
Well, you'd be right there with a bunch of guys.
That's what I figured out. You know, that's I can see that happening here in the future. Those are the good times. You know, it's just so much good fun and you know, avenues to be able to do it. Time to be able to go and spend it with you know, family. That's what it's all about. So that's I can see turning those parts into another vehicle here one of these days. And Lord only knows, maybe we'll build this our own this time. As much as we've done and had just other people build stuff for us, I told the boys here, I got this 64 Nova I'm trying to get done and finished and wrapped up. And I've got this whole corner where it's just got nothing but, you know, benders and notchers. And I was like, you know what? Maybe we'll just build the next buggy. Who knows what that ends up looking like.
There you go. Well, Doug, I'd like to say thank you so much and good luck in the future and everything you do with the racing. Hope to see you out rock crawling. I'd love to see you and Kat and the boys enjoy, you know, that part of the sport as well and lifestyle. Hope you're able to get out on the trail and get those kids broken in on the four-wheel drive lifestyle. And whatever happens, know that we miss you and hope to see you soon.
Yeah, we will, man. We'll catch up soon because Lord only knows I need to get out west and do some more good fun riding out there. So I'm sure I'll pass across here sooner or later than later, Big. Right. I appreciate it, man.
All right. Thank you, Doug. Say hello to the family for me. And
you bet, man.
We'll let you know when this is going to air. Thank you.
You bet. Appreciate it, brother. See you, man.
If you enjoy these podcasts, please give us a rating. Share some feedback with us via Facebook or Instagram. And share our link among your friends who might be like-minded. Well, that brings this episode to an end. Hope you enjoyed it. We'll catch you next week with Conversations with Big Rich. Thank you very much.